unfortunately, he's not very well. So hopefully we'll get to hear him another time. I spoke to him in the week, actually this week, to see how he was going, and he said, we're continuing the series on Isaiah, for those of you that haven't been here. So Ellis was going to be speaking on Isaiah, and we're working through this book. It's a book in the Old Testament, and we're working through this book, and Ellis was going to be speaking on chapters 13 to 27. I spoke to him in the week, and he said, it's all doom and gloom, isn't it, those chapters? He said, if you weren't depressed when you came here, you will be when you leave. Yeah. And I said, and he also said, he said to me, sir, it's not going to be a Bible study, he said, it's going to be a preach. I was really looking forward to it. I asked him when the last time he preached was. I said, when was the last time he preached? He says, 10, 20 years ago. It's like the decades just merge into like one. It's brilliant. But yeah, so yeah, I hope he gets better quick and that we will get to hear him again. So this is a bit of a doom and gloom passage sometimes when you just look at it, actually. It's probably the least read part of maybe even the Bible, but certainly of Isaiah. So yeah. So thanks, Ellis. So I got a text yesterday from Karen saying that Ellis isn't very well. So it's been a bit of a team effort. Claire took all the kids' duties this morning. Steve's done a little bit of a video presentation for this. So I hope it all hangs together. And I hope that Max can get the video bit sorted. It's never easy. So as Steve said when he spoke 2 or 3 weeks ago, he said basically the purpose of going through Isaiah is to get it into our hearts, to get the truths of Isaiah into us so that we can take it out to the world. Because he said, the world, people aren't going to read Isaiah. People aren't going to pick up the book of Christians, don't read Isaiah a lot. But I mean, people out there, never even heard of it, aren't going to read Isaiah. But people are going to read us. And so if we can learn the truths of Isaiah and in our lives put that into practice, then people will see God through that. But before we look at these passages today, I want to do a sort of overview of where we're up to now. A sort of previously in Isaiah. So, if we put up the next... Oh, I've got the thing, haven't I? Does this work? Let's have a look. No. Yes, no. Oh. Delayed. Yes. Okay, this is a timeline. Right, so, Isaiah was a prophet. He was a guy that lived... Oh, he's going on with it. If you click on the presentation, Max, that's it. All right, let's see if it stays on that page. He lived about, as that says, 700 years, so 2,700 years ago or so. And these are four kings. So he lived during all these four kings, Uzziah all the way through to Hezekiah and Hezekiah's death. And he spoke, what we read in Isaiah, is started when King Uzziah died. So about 740, when his son Jotham became king and King Uzziah died in the year 740 BC, that's when Isaiah started talking. And as Jared spoke about not so long ago, in that year, Isaiah saw God. This is 740 BC. So King Uzziah was a very good king. Lots of the country was doing really well. But towards the end of his reign, there started to be like a bit of problems with countries invading or potentially invading. And the country was a bit more unstable. So when he died, the people were a bit anxious about what was going to happen. But in that year, 740, God appears to Isaiah. And as Jared spoke and told us about, basically Isaiah had this vision of God with his throne filling the temple, filled with smoke, with these angels singing and shouting, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts." And the whole foundations of the building were shaking. Isaiah had a massive vision of God, and his response was, "Oh no, I am done for here. I am a man of unclean lips. I am not worthy to be standing here. I am going to die standing here in the presence of God." And God then took a coal and touched his lips and says, "No, I made you clean. I have made you clean." In other words, I've forgiven you. I've forgiven all that and made you clean. And then he gives Isaiah this commission, this job. He says, "Now what I want you to do is I want you to go to my people and I want you to tell them your experience. I want you to tell them, like you found, how sinful they are. And I want you to tell them how holy I am. And then I want you to tell them I'm going to make them clean. That's my plan. And I want you to take that to the people and tell them." So this was in
That was Isaiah 6 when Isaiah met God. And so the first sort of six chapters of Isaiah that we covered were basically that. It was when Isaiah met God and then he goes to God's people and it's a summary of what he said to God's people, how sinful they are. He said, you're not what you were supposed, you're not what God created you to be. You're not what you were supposed to be, is what he kept saying. But if you turn to me, I will make you clean again. I will make you the people that you're supposed to be. That's the first six chapters. Then chapter 7, just as we keep going through Isaiah, that jumps to a specific time in history. So that jumps to about 732 BC with this dude, Ahaz, the next king along, Jotham's son, when he's king. And Jerusalem, which is where he was king, was being attacked. And it was being attacked by two countries. It was being attacked by Israel, the rest of Israel, and Syria. And Isaiah says to Ahaz, he says, look, you've got no chance. You're a tiny little nation. You've got no chance. You're going to get absolutely slaughtered, right? You need to turn to God and trust in God here. If you turn to God and trust in God, he's going to deliver you from this attack. I've seen him. I've seen God. He's going to he's well able to deliver you. If you turn to him, he will save you. But Ahaz doesn't. Instead, he turns to someone else. He turns to another massive nation, Assyria at the time. He turns to them and says, will you come and help me? I've got this big problem. So Assyria step in and do help him. But he ends up, for the rest of his reign, paying them money. He's like a sort of puppet king to Assyria. He pays them cash and just like to stop them invading him as a sort of he's just for the rest of his reign, and the issue Ahaz had, which is what Steve talked about, was actually that Ahaz's God was too small. You know, he was too disconnected with what was going on in the world around him. Ahaz didn't think God had anything to do with the situation that he was in. And essentially, Ahaz just had a little God that just sat in the corner that he turned to if he wanted to, but actually didn't have any impact on his life, didn't do anything. And if you contrast that with Isaiah's view of God, when Isaiah met God and saw God, they're two very different views of God. And so Isaiah tells Ahaz about this God who's close, who can save them. But Ahaz doesn't listen. He just refuses to listen. So then as we go, carry on going through Isaiah, Isaiah starts talking to Ahaz about this God. He starts telling him and he starts saying, well, actually, things in the future, Ahaz, aren't going to be like this, okay? Instead of a king like you that's unable to save his people, who turns to other nations, who turns to other people for help that let him down, instead of that, one day there's going to be a king that does save the people, and he's coming. And he's going to trust God, and he's going to act justly. And he's going to be descended from David, just like Ahaz was, so he's going to be in the same line. He's going to be a king that comes to save the people. And he was talking about Jesus 1,300 years later. And it was God basically, through Isaiah, saying to Ahaz, look, my promise that I've given to the people is going to come true one day. And he was reaffirming that, and he was telling Ahaz, look, this is going to happen one day. This is going to happen. And now, if we jump forward again, this is a history lesson, isn't it? Everyone with me still? Or is everyone lost? Yeah, no. Sally's yawning. If we jump forward 32 years now, 31, 32 years, to Hezekiah, his son, okay? Now, we've got another attack on Jerusalem. This time Hezekiah's king, and it's a different nation that's attacking them. It's this Assyrian nation. The nation that Ahaz, his dad, was paying all this cash to. Hezekiah says, I'm not paying you any cash. So they think, okay. And so they're one of the biggest nations of the world, one of the most feared nations ever in history. They come and gather around little Jerusalem. Hundreds of thousands of these Assyrian soldiers. And almost identical situation, really, to that of Ahaz when he was surrounded by these other armies. And you can read about this in chapters 36 and 39 to 39 of Isaiah. But essentially, this army surrounded them. Hezekiah is in Jerusalem in a little castle. And this guy delivers him a letter. And the letter, basically, from the king of Assyria says, look, what nation has stood up to us No nation has stood up to us at all. Every nation that we've come up against, we've totally destroyed. You're trusting in this God of yours. They all had gods. All these nations had gods. What use did that do? Why are you going to trust in this God of yours? And he took that letter and Isaiah and Hezekiah read it. But this time, instead of like Ahaz, Hezekiah took this letter and he took it into the temple, into the courts, and he knelt down with this letter and he prayed. And he said, God, save us. Look what he's saying about you. You're the God. You're the God that created everything. And look what he's saying about you. Save us so that your name is lifted up. And that night, 185,000 of the Assyrian soldiers were killed in one swipe without them lifting a finger. And that was the start, and then they turned and fled, and that was the start of the downfall of the Assyrian Empire. And that was all because Hezekiah, unlike Ahaz, trusted God. So, and we're getting to these chapters today, why the change? Why the change from Ahaz to Hezekiah? Well, in between these two characters, in between Ahaz and Hezekiah, in between chapters 12 and 36 in Isaiah, we've got the chapters that we're looking at today. And the original purpose of these chapters was to build faith in God's people. That's what they were written for, and that's the same today. So their purpose today is the same. So what's in these doom and gloom passages that can encourage us and that can build our faith? So here's a question. Who is in control of history? So Max, if we can play that video.
for a video. Nice. Just a few clips of different nations, different times in history. Is God in control of history? When you look at all that, is God in control? Is God sovereign in history? That's the question. And that's the question that these passages address. Is God in control of all things? Or do things just happen? And God sort of tries to piece it all together. Or is he actually in control of everything? Is it going somewhere? And just like that montage of all those bits and pieces through history, the passages in Isaiah, these passages, piece together little bits of the nations at the time. So the Assyrians and the Babylonians and the Philistines, all these nations that were going on at the time, it tells a little bit about them and it tells what happened to them. Except it tells you before it happened. Isaiah wrote these things before they happened. It talked about the nations being destroyed by other nations before it happened. And they were written to show that God is sovereign and God is in control of history. All nations, all of history. Not just Israel and God's people, but all nations and all history. Every nation that rises and every nation that falls, every leader that's raised up, God is sovereign. God is sovereign. Now that's not to say God causes all these things, but God is sovereign over all of them, and all things are working towards an end. God is not indifferent, and God is not distant in the events of history. God is in control of them all. So if we can get... Shall I do that next? Does that work? No, it's not working, is it, mate? Don't know if it's right. So, essentially what God does in these passages, as we go through in Isaiah, is to tell his people. So this, what we're talking about, is chapters 13 to 27, if you want to read them at some point. They are quite hard going, but yeah. And what essentially God is saying is, one of the things he's saying is, this is the end game. This is what it will look like on the final day. What things will ultimately look like. This is what everything is heading towards. So there are passages in there that talk about the final day, the final thing, the end result. And it's effectively God saying, look, I'm in control and this is where we're going. This is where we're going. And that future day is still future to us. So the first thing I want to do is look at that, and then we're going to look at the other passages in there. So Isaiah says, Isaiah 27, and in that day a great trumpet will be blown, and those who are lost in the land of Assyria and those who are driven out in the land of Egypt will come and worship the Lord on the holy mountain of Jerusalem. So all people that are Christians will be gathered together on that day. And then it says, and on this mountain, the Lord of hosts, I don't know if I've got another slide yet, the Lord of hosts will make for all peoples a feast of rich food, of well-aged wine, of rich food full of marrow, of aged wine, well refined. And he shall swallow up on this mountain the covering that's cast over all peoples, the veil that's spread over all nations, and he shall swallow up death forever. And the Lord God will wipe away tears from all faces, and the reproach of his people he will take away from the earth, for the Lord has spoken. And it will be said on that day, behold, this is our God. We've waited for him that he might save us. This is the Lord. We have waited for him. Let us be glad and rejoice in his salvation. That's the final day. That's the end game. And God describes it in these chapters. The future promise for all people is this, a new heaven and a new earth. If you know Jesus, this is your future. We know it because he's told us. A new heaven and a new earth. New bodies that won't perish or pass away. No more tears. No more sadness. Death. Death will be no more. That's the end game. So that's what Isaiah tells us in these passages. But then, along with these, there are prophecies about other things that happen in the nearer future. So you've got this final day when this is it for us. But then God, he also talks about what happens to people that don't know Jesus, and that's in there as well.
And in fact, if you read chapters 24 to 27, it gets called Isaiah's mini-apocalypse. I think we can have a mini-apocalypse. But basically, it's pretty doom and gloom in those for the people that don't know God. But that's the end times. And then in between that, he gives these little prophecies about things that are happening more recently in the time of the guys. So this is in Hezekiah's time and Ahaz's time. And this is the faith-building part, because when God says the Assyrians are going to be defeated by the Babylonians 100 years before it happens, and then God's people see that it happens, they start thinking, hey, this thing God says about the future might happen. You know, their faith starts being built up. And it reminded me as I was looking at this about with kids, how when you teach kids. And I remember with Jude on the stairs, trying to get him to jump off a step into your hands, and he won't do it. No, I don't want to, I'm scared. And then he does it off the first step. And it gets a bit more faith, confidence gets built, then he goes up another step. Then I was doing it, and he leapt into it. And so he's on step four, leaps into my arms, and his confidence is built, actually, that actually he trusts you. There's trust built each time something happens, and it works. Anyway, this one time, he kept walking up the stairs, and I thought he was just going to his bedroom anyway, so I sort of turned, and I just heard this dad, and from the top step, he just threw himself down the stairs. So I leapt up the stairs, and we sort of managed to meet in a mess in the middle of the stairs, but unfortunately, all right. But yeah, but God doesn't do that, does he? You can't. God is good for all his promises. That's the point. But the point is, as God's people see these promises, these things that have been predicted happening, it builds their faith that actually, yeah, this final day is coming. And faith building in that way. So in chapter 14, we see the fall of Assyria, which happened, over 100 years later. And then in chapter 13, the fall of Babylon to the Persians. So Assyria was defeated by Babylon, then the Persians. All this is predicted over 150 years before it happened. And the aim is to build faith in God's people so that when they see it happen, they think, yeah, God is in control of this. He told us about this beforehand. In the middle of these chapters, chapter 20, right, God says to Isaiah, in a few years, the Assyrians are going to come and they're going to take the Egyptians away as prisoners, naked and barefoot. So I thought, I think it's great. That's been brilliant to see that. I don't like the Egyptians. And then God says, so I want you to go around naked and barefoot to show my people that's what's going to happen for 3 years. Seriously. So Isaiah does it. So Isaiah goes around naked and barefooted for 3 years to demonstrate to the people that's what's going to happen. But when the Assyrians did come and marched the Egyptians away, naked and barefooted with buttocks uncovered, it says, Isaiah was vindicated. He was proved right in front of all God's people because he believed and trusted God. And this wasn't because God wanted to make him look silly. This was because God wanted them to remember what he'd said. So if Isaiah had just said that, they would have probably seen these people marching away and said, oh, didn't Isaiah say something about this might happen? Oh, I don't know. I can't remember. But no one's going to forget Isaiah walking around for 3 years naked. They're going to remember that God said this. They're going to remember that's what God said. So Isaiah was obedient, and he was obedient because he believed God's promises, and that's the key. And we see that pattern throughout the Bible. When God's people are obedient, they're obedient because they believe God's promises. So it's... how are we going to do? There we go. So that's the six. So they trust in God, and they believe his promises, so they obey his call. That's the pattern you see throughout the whole Bible. And we stand, what's this got to do with us today? I mean, I spent a long time on this, and we're actually going to get around to actually what that means for us today. There's no Assyrians, Babylonians, all the rest of it, but actually, we stand in a good point in history, in the sense that we can see what's happened to all those nations, can't we? We can see, as I said, you can tell that if you look through history, our history books will tell us all those things happened to those nations. So we can see that what God said really did happen. But I suppose you could be cynical and you could say, well, yeah, but how do I know that wasn't written after they happened? You know, it was a long time ago, maybe 100 years, what's that? Maybe it was written before that happened. But there are other promises, aren't there, that have been fulfilled that you can't really argue were written before. So
in Isaiah. Isaiah predicted this guy called Jesus, and you can't argue that it was written after Jesus read Isaiah. Jesus had it, and Isaiah says that this guy was going to be born in the line of David. Jesus was. Jesus opened eyes, both physically and to see God, and he did that. Jesus spent his whole life serving, just like Isaiah said he would. Isaiah predicted this servant would come and serve. He suffered, just like Isaiah said he would. And actually, if you read Isaiah 53, it's an incredible detail, exactly how he suffered. And that came, that prophecy came true. We can see that in history. And these are written about in history books. This guy, Jesus, he's written about in history books. And he was innocent, but he was sentenced to death. He was laid in a grave with the wicked and with a rich man in his death, just like Isaiah said he would. Isaiah 53 says that he will be laid in a grave with a rich man and the wicked. And that's exactly what happened. And since his death and his resurrection, the good news of Jesus has been spread to all nations, just like Isaiah said it would. Not just Israel, but for all nations. He said, this is, yeah. And so, when God promises that Jesus is going to come again, which he does, and when he says that when he comes again, we'll be like him, and we'll have new bodies, perfect bodies, won't perish, no more tears, no more depression, no more anxiety, no more worries, no more death, we should believe that. And I think, as I was just thinking about this, I thought, do you know what? I think probably most of us would say, yeah, I do believe that. I'd hope most of us would say that, actually. Yeah, I do believe that. I believe Jesus came, it was prophesied and he came, and I believe the promises that Jesus is going to come again, and he's going to come again. But if you're like me, I suppose it's when life's problems come, isn't it? The big things like that are fine. Yeah, Jesus is coming again, but it's when the problems hit. It's when there's a relationship problem, or when there's a problem in the family, or when there's a work problem, or when there's a financial problem. And Claire will tell you what I'm like. It's like, oh, this is hopeless, man. I can't keep going like this. This is rubbish. This can't be. I can't live. I can't do this. And it all becomes hopeless. So, all right, for the big things. Yeah, Jesus is coming again. But God's sovereignty in those little things in my life, I struggle a bit with, to be honest. Where are you, God, in this? What's happening here? How can this be you? But the God who's sovereign over all of history, so the rise and fall of all those nations we saw, both back then and now, is also sovereign over all the events of our lives. As Isaiah said, God's not distant. He's not far removed. He's close. In fact, as Isaiah calls him Emmanuel, God with us, he's close. And when the storms hit us, God is still in control. God is still in control when we're going through those times in our lives, whether we feel like he is or not. And that's the key point. That's what it's about. Whether we feel like it or not, he is. It doesn't change the fact that God is in control. And I'm sure for Isaiah, it never felt always like he was in control, especially when he was walking around naked for 3 years. And I suppose my thoughts about this were actually that, just going back to what Steve was talking about, that we need to get these truths in our heart so the world can see the truths of the Bible. It's in those day-to-day things and how we respond to that that the world sees God. How we cope with life's problems will witness more than anything else to the people that are around us of our faith in our God who is in control of all things. And I suppose that's where I want to finish today on that. I asked Ellis when I spoke to him, do you want us to do any sing any songs at the end? He says, no, I just want to finish with the word. When you sing songs, the word just disappears. So I'm like, yeah. We are going to finish with a song though today, even though that. But I want to finish. Yeah, I want to finish with something because I want to focus us in on something. So I'm hoping that what Ellie said isn't going to happen today. But yeah, I'm all too aware that it's easy to go away from things like this and looking at passages like this and think, yeah, I know God is in control of history, and yet we are in the middle of a situation where we can't feel it. And we're not talking like that in our own lives.
and we're really struggling. And I know that for myself. It's easy to walk out of here believing in your head these things and even believing in your heart these things. But actually, for that situation that you're in, it doesn't seem like it. And you're struggling to talk like that, either to yourself, to your friends, to anyone else. And I know there are people here like that. They're in the middle of struggles now at the moment. And I know those people, a lot of them, know that God is in control, know that Jesus will come again and it will be wonderful and all those promises. But actually, talking it and actually convincing themselves of it is sometimes hard. And sometimes we end up despising the times, those tough times. We end up just wanting them to be over. But actually, my experience, and I know experience of a lot of people, is often in these times that God is doing the most in our lives, you know, in building trust in Him in particular. Yeah. And I think it's, as I say, it's when we talk about that and when we proclaim that, even when we don't feel it, but just because we know it's truth, that it speaks to people that are around us that don't have that, that don't have that knowledge that there is somebody that loves them and has the best in store for them, that is in control of everything. And that is, yeah, that's a wonderful thing. And there's a promise I wanted to finish on, and then we're going to stand and sing, a promise in these chapters that comes with trusting in God. And these are probably some of the most unread verses, as I say, in the Bible. And certainly the most unread verses in Isaiah. But in the midst of them, there's a promise that most people will have heard of. This is hopeless, isn't it? There we go. A lot of people will have heard of that. It comes in the middle of all these verses. You keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever, for the Lord God is an everlasting rock. The promise is peace. The promise is peace. So yeah, I wonder if we could stand to sing. I've had this song in my mind all week, even before I knew I was going to be preaching today. We listened to it in our life group actually this week on Wednesday. So I don't know if you can get that up, Max. It's a song that says, it's basically us preaching to ourselves almost. It is well, it says. But actually there's lines in it that says, let go my soul and trust in him. The waves and wind still know his name. God's not just in control of the nations of the world, he's in control of the whole of creation. The waves and winds still know his name. And through it all, my eyes are on you and it is well with me. And it's not a feeling. This is not a feeling. And I felt, as I was preparing for this, I felt that there are people here that just don't feel this, but need to declare it. This is just a declaration. It is well with my soul is not a feeling. It's not. We don't say that when we feel good. We say it because it's a fact. We say it because we're held in a Father's hands that looks after us. And when we say, be still my soul and trust in him, that's preaching. That's preaching to our souls. That's saying, be still my soul and trust in him. And I think there's people here that don't feel that at the moment, but just need to be singing this out and saying it as a fact. So that's what I wanted us to do, really, is to sort of think, if you're in that situation, if you need prayer, then let someone know and someone will pray with you if you want that. If you want to just be still with God and preach to your soul to be still and trust in him. God is good for his promises, for all his promises. He proves that time and again through his word, and I know we have testimony after testimony in our lives. So yeah, Father, I thank you that you, throughout history, have proved that you are a God that is in control, that you have proved that you are a God that is working things towards one end, towards one final glorious day. And we see and we have evidence, God, of you at work in history and evidence of you at work in our lives. And God, we want to be a people that declares that. We want to be like Isaiah, that says, we know this is coming, and we know a God who holds us secure. And whatever comes, whatever I'm faced with, whatever I'm going through in life, that's not altered. I don't understand it. I don't understand what I'm going through, but I know a God who only works things out for my good. That whatever I'm going through, the purpose is that I am made to be more like the image of his son, like Jesus. And God, make us a people like that. Give us boldness to declare that to our friends and our neighbours. That when we're faced with worries, when there's stuff in the news, when there's terrorist attacks, and when we're in the middle of conversations where people are talking about anxieties, we can say we're at peace because we know the guy that's in control of history, and he is for us and he is with us. And God, as we go through Isaiah, I pray that you will burn these things onto our heart, your character of a sovereign God, your character of a God that makes new, that makes things new. And I just lift up folks here that are in the middle of storms and don't feel your sovereignty and don't feel in their feelings that actually that's what's happening. But God, I pray that they, yeah, deeper than that, deeper than a feeling, have that peace that you promised when we put our trust in you and declare you as our God, as the God, as sovereign. Amen.